Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is here.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. This is Tech Talk.
And that's,
good morning.
And that's Michael Tech Talk Kessler.
Yes.
Well, I'm Dave Sparky Saganaki, and we're coming to.
We are. And if I seem even more than usually discombobled here this morning, we've got a new board. We're in a new studio. We got a new spot to sit.
I think it's the same board.
New windows.
Oh. It's set up a little differently.
Yeah. Don't tell people. I have a great excuse this week.
But the engineering staff did a great job with this new studio. It looks and sounds fantastic.
It does. It sounds fantastic. It looks great too. And it's exciting. I've got a window out into the world again. I really like that.
That's my favorite part of the studio.
Yeah, I missed that. It's been a long time since we've had that. And people are right now, in fact, staring in and watching us. So
yeah, we've got two. We've got. Good to see you. We've got two windows. We have one to the outside world, out to the outdoors, and we have one into the green room of the studio.
That's right. Yeah, people can see us. We can see them. We need to get some one-way mirror glass there, so that maybe we're not
distracted,
pestered. Yeah,
we're not used to it. We were completely acclimated to that previously.
Yes.
I used to come in and make faces at people all the time just to get them accustomed to distraction.
Well, and I remember Rick used to come in and if you could live through Rick getting set up.
Rick, what was his on-air name again? Jeb Stewart? What was it?
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah. I never could get him straight for a year because
he was the Confederate president. What was his name?
I don't know. Rusty's sticking his head in. He's got an idea. What? No, he just wanted to make things.
No, see, he's just a straight Lincoln.
Lincoln Jones. Lincoln Jones used to come in and he would set up before the show. He'd have
all
computers,
kinds of gear.
Desktops, yeah. Laptops, yeah. Headphones.
And he wasn't shy about pushing on you.
No. He'd crawl under the desk. I'd feel things around my legs, and I'd think, what is going on down there? And if you could survive that, you'd run the gauntlet, and you were okay.
Yeah, so. But we're not. We have to get reacclimated.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
To a new
we do.
Space. Is it our space yet? No. By the end of the show, it will be.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. We're getting there. We're putting it together. And we got a good show today. It is another Tech Talk show. It's Saturday morning. We're going to have Jay Geek Trivia Garmin on with us in just a little while, and not only that, but of course, and I know we're going to make time this week for some cool sites of the week, and I've got a great little podcast only song of the week set up for us, and it's not going to be a repeat. I got emails because I repeated that podcast only song last week. I was really excited about it that you came
two weeks ago now,
and people sent me emails and said, hey, don't do that.
Well, by the way, that's the reason we were gone last week, because they were renovating the studio and moving equipment from one studio to another.
So. Yes. Yeah, the construction work had to be done, and shouts out to Mike B and Chris Z and a lot of the other guys around here. Not me. I didn't do a darn thing. I offered some advice from afar.
Yeah.
And that was about all I did.
I didn't even do that. I was going to stop by and see how it was going, but you know how that would have gone. The middle of the night on Sunday morning, you'd probably get away for 10 minutes for coffee or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's when you need to show up to see how things are going. Is, about 3 a.m. Sunday morning when Mike B's on his 15th Red Bull. And that's when you fear for your life.
Definitely.
But it all made it through. Well, and you were showing me, speaking of fearing for your life, I was just getting so wrapped up in that driving game. Dave has got a new toy.
Well, first of all, I have a new toy. It's called the Playbook, the BlackBerry Playbook. I've been wanting a tablet for a long time, and if you look at what these things cost compared to other things out there at the same price point, it's hard to not do it.
Yeah.
And plus, they've just had a new software update for the operating system.
Oh, really?
Yeah, OS 2 now has native email, that sort of thing. But it's a 7-inch tablet. It's really cool. If you're in the market for a tablet, definitely take a hard look at this one. It's a pretty cool device.
Excellent. And I got to say, yeah, I mean, it's fun to play with. We're playing Asphalt, which is this driving game, and it was
Tetris.
Tetris.
Right.
Tetris was good.
Then there's all, well, you know, there's the one real knock on it is there's not a lot of apps for it. But now you can port over Android apps now.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, that's what the software upgrade did. So
right.
do you have access to the actual Android market? Or?
You do, but it's limited to the things that BlackBerry has approved.
Okay.
However, there are ways to sideload. There's ways around it. There's ways to kind of hack around the limitations. But you do so at your own risk, of course, of, you know, jeopardizing the tablet or just not having the app run properly.
Yep.
But it's pretty much it's Android emulation that's running on the playbook.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
running the QNX operating system, which is something I played with like maybe 15 years ago, and it was very impressed. It's a very small footprint operating system, and it works great. And I don't, you know, people talk about how great the iBook, you know, the iPad is and all that. And
yes.
I've played with it in a limited way, but if it's better than this, I've got to get one. I do, because this is really good. This is really, I haven't felt this kind of affection for a piece of technology in a long time.
Yep. Yep. I know how you feel. I've got my wife has got an Android tablet now as well. Now she's got a Samsung Galaxy.
Right.
And I feel
fantastic choice.
It is. It's wonderful. I have a blast with it. Now we went the cheap route. We got a refurbished one off of Woot. Woot is one of
Woot.com,
my favorite websites.
Close out. Well, yeah. They're sell out. Yeah, so you can get treasures there. You can get. I was a Wooter from way back. You can get some really. You wish you hadn't ordered it. Stuff.
Yeah. Yes. You can even get the Woot bag of crap.
And they're honest about it.
Yeah, they're telling you, we have no idea what you're going to get. We're just going to throw a bunch of crap in a bag and send it to you.
Right. Got to make room.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, we did get a tablet through that, the Samsung Galaxy, and it's fantastic. I love it. And unfortunately, right now, I'm still getting my wife geared into using it, and I get so envious of her because she's got it. And I go, oh, you know, you could do this with it. You could do that.
And she's like, give it back.
Yeah. Well, but no. What's worse is she doesn't use it to its capabilities. And I feel badly about it.
Oh, shut up.
You know, the kids use it. The kids love it. They're in there.
I bet.
And in fact, I just downloaded today. The time that I get to play with it is in the morning time before she's up.
Right.
So I get up before she's up, you know, for work and things, and I'll have it out, and I love Google Currents. If you can get it on your playbook, you should look for it. It's a magazine reading tool.
Is it an app? Is it an app or a web application?
It's an app. Right. It is an app, and basically it downloads magazines, get Savour, you can get Good Times, Forbes, Al Jazeera. I have signed up on that,
and it's
all free. You don't have to pay for these. Lifehacker, they've got a magazine type thing that comes through this. Whatever your bent, you know, political or interest, there's magazines out there that are available on Google Currents that you can download and you can flip through them, and it's very beautifully done. It's visually enticing, and it's just a nicely set up app. So I use that, and that's how I get a lot of my news these days that's non-technical is through this Google Currents app.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention with the playbook, though, another knock on the playbook. I have to bring it up because I had it before I even knew you got this. I had this queued up as a storyline today, was that Netflix has come out and stated officially they have zero plans to support BlackBerry devices, including the playbook.
Well, so that doesn't mean that you can't, but they do have an Android app, and it could be possible to port that over.
Oh, maybe you could, like you said, you can sideload that.
Yeah, you can sideload it, or they could make BlackBerry makes some kind of arrangement with Netflix to have that app available in the in the BlackBerry App Store. So that's a possible, and that's the risk you take. That's the caveat. First of all, this is a 64 gig. This is a 64 gig.
Nice.
A hard drive, and it was the same price as, or they're right in the neighborhood of a Kindle Fire.
Okay.
So if you're gonna compare those, it's like it's hard. Not to, and yeah. Another big difference, a lot of tablets like the Galaxy Tab is a 10-inch screen. This is a 7-inch screen.
Yep.
And the trade-off there is more portability for the 7-inch, but you were just playing that very graphics-intensive game, and you have to hold it pretty close to your face, but...
But the graphics are great, though.
The screen and speakers are just... The hardware is great.
Yeah.
The operating system, the QNX operating system is just... Very fantastic, very slick, and they're still not done with it. I mean, it's been out for 8 or 10 months. I think April it came out last year.
Yeah.
And for them to take this long to come up with a major update for this the operating system is ridiculous, especially since it's a mature this operating system's been around a long time. All they had to do, it's easy for me to say, but I'm sure that take a lot of resources to upgrade the operating system.
Yeah. Now, does it have Bluetooth as well?
It does.
Oh, okay.
Well, up until this upgrade, it did not have the AD2P. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. For the audio device player.
Right. Yeah. That I thought was criminal. I was like, really? I couldn't believe that. But luckily, I bought just before the major operating system upgrade, and it does work now.
Nice.
The problem with that, though, is when you're streaming audio to a Bluetooth device, it really slows down the Wi-Fi.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that would would make sense. That would make sense.
Well, noticed that this morning. I don't know if that's true or just have it to be a coincidence or whatever. But it definitely does happen. So
interesting. Cool stuff.
And you can multitask. Four applications open, you're okay. Five, that brings us to that's too many.
Starts to make a crawl. Yeah. And then I noticed that too with the Samsung Galaxy, which we bought it refurbed for probably a third again as much as the Playbook. And I think the processor is a little bit faster on it, but we noticed that too. Is that if the kids are playing. What is that game called? The Angry Fruit or whatever? There's the one Fruit Ninja. That's it. Yeah. Where you're hacking and slashing at watermelons as they fly at you. They'll leave that on in the background, and switch to something else, and we won't realize it. Before you know it, there's like five or six apps open. My wife's screaming at me saying, I don't know if I like this thing. It doesn't work. How am I supposed to? I can't even get my email on it anymore. And it's, let's take a look.
I imagine Fruit Ninja is pretty resource intensive, relatively speaking. Tablets are not. The fact that they pack the processing power they do in such a small package without a fan. They produce very little heat and such so they're limited in what they can do.
And the battery life is phenomenal. That always shocks me.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Yeah. You should be able to get, doing standard music listening and things, most of a full day. It's good stuff. Good stuff. I'm envious. I am envious.
I think, like I said, anybody that's considering getting a tablet, when I first heard BlackBerry Playbook, I was like, I dismissed it out of hand. And then I saw the deal on this and then did a lot of research. Amazon.com has probably 1,000 reviews of the BlackBerry Playbook. And I read all of them before I bought. Now, maybe not all of them.
Yeah. Hey, you always look through and you read some of the 5-star ones. Then you're like, okay, just show me the 1-star ones.
I always do the one, If I can get through a page of 1-stars, then you can move on.
Yeah, you always got to look at those with a discriminating eye, and it's like, okay, how much of an idiot was this person who wrote it? Because usually the 1-star reviews, I look at them and like, well, it's because you didn't know what you were doing, or clearly you bought the wrong thing for you.
Right.
But the people still bother to go in there and they put it in there. It's kind of like the app review system, too. When I see like the free apps on Amazon.com, if you go there, they have a free app of the day, and that's great. I've gotten a lot of my apps from the free app of the day, and looking through those, but always the star rating on them is usually about 3 stars because
right.
there's several hundred people that will write right away and say, why are they asking for these permissions on a stupid app of the day? I was like, well, you're not responding if it works or not. You're
right.
asking a question, really, yeah. but you're still going to give it a 1-star rating because of that. So
And crackberry.com was another good source for information.
Yes.
And like you say, ratings, you know, reviews, like you say, you have to take all of them with a grain of salt, you know, but when there's enough of them, and you could always get a better idea of, more so than product descriptions, reviews will give you a better idea about what the features are and how they work and such.
Yes, yes, yeah, and there's some that are quite good and there's some that are not so good. And mentioned the iPad and all this, and we've talked the last few shows about not buying an iPad in Germany and.
Oh, yeah.
It's happened again. Now, Apple cannot sell the iCloud features in Germany
right.
again because of that Motorola patent, which they lost their lawsuit.
They lost it completely? No appeals?
Well, I mean, you know, I think there's always room for an appeal. What has happened, though, is that Motorola, because of their loss, Apple actually wrote this press release to German fans. They said, due to recent patent litigation by Motorola Mobility, iCloud and Mobile Me users are unable to have iCloud and Mobile Me email pushed to their iOS devices while located within the borders of Germany. So it's a very localized ruling. Apple says they do believe that Motorola's patent is invalid and is appealing the decision. But it basically just affects the push email features, and it has to do with Motorola saying that they've had this patent for some time and that they
Well, you could still go to iCloud, right? And
you could still go to iCloud and you can get your email through other means. You just can't have it pushed to you.
You have to go get it
via the iCloud service. Exactly. Now, and of course, you know, Motorola has lost and Android have lost patents in Germany from Apple. And so this is kind of turnabout is fair play. Apple, in fact, I mean, you know, it gets silly. It gets really ridiculous. Like if you're in Germany, the Android phones, most of them have this lock unlock feature, which mm-hmm. is a slide to open, and then you type in your password and blah,
right.
blah, blah. You can't have that in Germany. It has to be this goofy circular motion because Apple has patented the single direction or unidirectional slide to unlock feature. And so you can't.
We all just get along?
Exactly. No. Please. No. You know, but this is typical for Apple. Apple is very aggressively pushed patents and very aggressively striven for lockdown of Android tablets, Android phone, and Android functionality across the globe. They won similar lawsuits in Australia. They went after Motorola and basically locked up the distribution chains for Apple product. So they said, for example, you know, you hear about a lot of this stuff with Foxconn. And Foxconn, though, in China and Thailand and those regions of the world are not just suppliers of Apple equipment. Of course, those are suppliers of a huge breadth of technology equipment. Apple at
I heard an astonishing figure, and maybe we'll Google this to find out.
Yeah.
But it's like 80 or 90% of the consumer electronics are produced by Foxconn.
Yes, that's right. Motorola, IBM, if you have an Xbox or a PlayStation, Nintendo, all of these in one way at some point or another are touched by Foxconn workers. And it really is a huge number. And well, I was going to mention the one thing I was going to finish up with the Apple thing was that at one point Apple basically, and this was Steve Jobs, basically bought all of the transports out of a certain regions of China in order not just so that he would be able to be insured of having the product that he wanted on store shelves come Christmas time, but so that he could keep other manufacturers from getting their products in to the U.S. at Christmas time, and he was successful in doing it. And lo and behold, now we have. I think that was for the iPad 2, I believe, is when he did that.
Another, and it's all about dog eat dog, corporate survival and profits and stuff. But in reading the Jobs biography, one of the things that really struck me in terms of advantage. Was when the iPod first came out and the iPad first came out, they were able to use a lot more of their budget for marketing than they ordinarily would have, simply because the more people heard about the iPad and iPod, the more they wanted to buy their computers, the laptops and the desktops, so they could justify spending that much more on marketing and taking it from other. They could take, what are some of the Apple, MacBooks
and
the Airs.
Yep.
They could take the marketing budget from that and just throw it into the iPad, iPod. And when you think about that, that makes sense. Remember all the billboards, you know, that you were inundated with, and the TV commercials. They were very well done and everything, and they're very cool, but they were everywhere.
Yes.
And that's a real good marketing leverage advantage.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting, too, you mentioned that, is that you typically don't see simultaneously ads out for the iPod, the iPad, and the AirBook, and so on. They really do focus on single products at a time and inundate their marketing.
But they don't need to advertise. It's such a halo product. The iPad and the iPod were such halo products. They didn't need. You know, you saw very little about the MacBook Air or the MacBook, any of those things.
That's right. You know. Yeah. But it got you into the Apple Store.
Into the walled garden.
Yes. Exactly. Which is what Amazon's trying to do with their Kindle Fire.
Right.
You know, is get you into
And they're doing a pretty good job, I guess.
Yeah.
Their cloud services, they have a nicely developed cloud service and a seamless e-book purchase.
Yep, and of course the big rumor floating around is that the iPad 3 is going to have an option for a 7-inch size tablet, very similar to your Playbook, similar to the Kindle Fire, and that but it's going to keep people involved with Apple and rolled up into the whole Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, I know Jobs was against the 7-inch size, but it's got its virtues. It's an interesting trade-off. Go down to the 7-inch side.
Yeah, and I honestly, size. Other than seeing yours and playing with yours here for a few minutes, that's the first I've played with the 7-inch. I've done a lot of don't even start. I stick with the 10-inchers, you know. I think we need to call Jay. I think we need to do.
That's a good plan.
Let's see.
Speaking of that sort of thing, he posted pictures of his daughter on his new baby daughter online.
Yes, he did. And she's beautiful.
Yeah,
she's
very beautiful.
Good morning.
Wow.
Good morning, Mr. Garman. That was one ring. Wow.
Morning, Jay.
How you doing, fellas?
You must have been as desperate as us. We were actually
one of those mornings, huh?
We were actually just commenting on your beautiful family and
how you got them.
Yeah. Sadly, yes, we've degenerated to that level of conversation this morning. Now you though, I'm gonna lift it back up again. You just got back from yet another reason for me to be sad every time I talk to you and sad about my life is your recent trip out east. Tell us a little bit about Boscone and what you got up to there.
Well, besides, you know, nullifying your existence, it was a good time.
Doesn't take much, though. I wouldn't hold that high in high esteem.
I got to watch a famous artist for sci-fi book covers, Dan Dos Santos, paint a portrait of author John Scalzi while John Scalzi was was addressing a crowd, which was an odd experience, because every time he'd be in the middle of answering a question, Dos Santos would just move his head back to the center line and say, look down and don't move your mouth, which is sort of a hard thing to do when you're trying to answer questions, yeah. Which is pretty funny. I got to spend over an hour and a half just at a table with Charlie Strauss discussing his work, including get some undisclosable heads up on some books he's working on soon. Although I will say, if you liked Halting State, there's more where that's coming from.
Excellent.
Let's see, what else happened? Oh, I got to go to three different panels of Bruce Schneier, and that is one paranoid dude. For those who don't know, Bruce Schneier is a well-regarded security expert and cryptography expert. And, yeah, he's not going to be shopping at Target anytime soon. Let's just put it that way. That is one. He's a smart and friendly guy, but he is a paranoid dude.
Yeah, there's him, and there's one other guy too that I've sent a few emails out to try and get them on the show, because I'm a very non-paranoid person when it comes to sharing my data online, and Dave thinks I'm to the extreme of that. So I've been trying to find someone to come on other than Dave to balance that.
But that's what you want in a security guy, though, is somebody paranoid.
Oh yeah,
that's
absolutely
up all night trying to figure out what's happening.
Absolutely. No, yeah, the list of names. I mean, when I was looking through the it was just amazing. And you sent out, and you're like, yeah, Jerry Purnell's going to be there, Scalzi, Strauss, all these guys. The only thing that would have made me more jealous, if you had told me that Jack Chalker had risen from the grave and decided to make one last appearance, that might have pushed it over the edge for me. But man, what a lineup. What a lineup.
Well, and as happens, some of the lineup didn't make it. Jerry Purnell and Alan Steele both bowed out due to illness. And that's the third time I was supposed to see Alan Steele, and he didn't show up somewhere. So I'm going to start taking this personally.
That's a good idea.
I know you watch Big Bang Theory, so I'm just going to go, well.
Actually, what's funny is I actually met a young lady named Leah Wilson. It's strange that editors-in-chief of major book imprints are younger than me. That is not okay. But she is, and she actually was there promoting their new companion guide to the Big Bang Theory. And I complimented her on some of the content in it, and she led a great discussion of that show, but I said, I can't buy this book because I know you're just going to add to it once the show is off the air. You can't have a comprehensive companion guide for a show that's still on the air. She's like, oh, I completely agree, but we're going to make the most money off this companion guide while the show is on the air. So like, oh, right. I totally get the mercenary aspect of this, but I'm not going to buy your book until, it's like, I've bought both of your companion guides, the Serenity and Firefly, because they ain't making any more of those. we can analyze the complete canon. I will probably buy their book on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I'm not buying it on Big Bang Theory. I'm not going to, go buy it on Fringe. And they have a good one on Fringe because there's still a lot of stuff happening in Fringe.
Well, why can't they produce a companion guide like this and then say for... Maybe you pay a one-time extra $5 or something. You not only get the nice coffee table book, but you get access to a paywalled blog that is the running update for that book. And eventually they'll produce yet another, of course, final compendium. But I mean, has that been tried, or am I just out of the loop and that's already been done, or is this for some reason difficult to do?
That would be what they call leaving money on the table.
You're so cynical,
Jay. Why would we do that? This is the publishing industry. This is where we want to publish the same book in a collector's edition hardback with no changes and get you to buy it a second time. We're certainly not going to give you for a discounted rate something with actual fresh content in it. That's not how this works.
Oh, man. Cynical as that is, I imagine you're right.
Now, to me, this is also what's wrong with the publishing industry, because especially as ebooks become more prevalent, they could totally get into that Best Buy extended warranty racket where you get into some sort of extended edition warranty. It's like, if we ever put out a new edition, you're buying this for $3.99, but for an extra dollar, if we ever update this version, you can download the updated version for free. It's a zero marginal cost for them.
Yeah.
But they're getting your dollar now.
It's not a software assurance at that point. That it's literature assurance. You got to pay for your LA. how many cows would you like of that? That's not a bad idea. I like it. You know what? In that type of thing, I might be willing to pay for a little bit. Interesting.
Well, I was wondering when we're going to start charging for our podcasts.
We already do. We're charging fair market rate for it right now. And
here's the problem with that. We have to cut customer Jones in on the royalty.
This is true. Oh man. Oh, you know, with the literature assurance package too. I would want to be able to buy that for like series that have ended with the death of the hero. I would want to pay a little bit extra to say, you know what, if they decide to resurrect the hero, I want free access to the next book or two in the series, because that just ain't fair, you know, that type of thing.
Actually, I would posit the opposite. For good series that ended well, I would pay the publisher money not to make sequels.
Yes.
If I could give George Lucas money to not mess with Star Wars anymore, I would give him that money.
I would definitely have paid $8 not to have ever heard the word Jar Jar used in a sentence. Definitely. That would be well worth the money.
And at this point, I mean, I think, and I've met Kevin J. Anderson. He's a nice guy, so I don't hold any ill will against him. But if Frank Herbert's son would just put a number out there to tell us what it's going to take for him to not ever make any more Exploded Dune sequels, I'm pretty sure he could get that money.
Yes.
I think you guys have just come up with a great seed idea for a website.
Yeah. pay money to keep. Could keep people from writing.
No, well, you could just do the speculation. You know, you could be like a futures market.
Yeah.
You know, you just like what's, you know, you could buy, you know, you could use virtual money to buy virtual shares of, you know, buying off creative people as. You know, to not do stuff.
It worked so well in the corn and dairy industries that paying them not to produce.
I tell you. I know an actuarial we could get on board to try and work this out.
It may have legs. It may have legs. So back to Bosco though. So what if there was a highlight for you? You know what would you pick out and say, man, this was something that made the trip and being away from my lovely family for a few days all worth it.
Probably the Charlie Strauss coffee clutch, which don't ask me to spell that, but basically it's just sitting around a table and having drinks with like him and nine other people, him and 10 fans. And he went long, like it was supposed to be an hour and we were there at least an hour and a half. And this is a really, really bright dude. But I confess to him some disappointment and confusion with the last novel of his I read, which was Rule 34. Mm-hmm. And we basically spent a good 30 of the 90 minutes together with him explaining that book to us, and explaining how hard it was for him to write. Like, he basically admitted, this broke my head to write. Because I can't explain what the conversation, without giving away the big reveal at the end of the book, but it had to do with a very particular kind of artificial intelligence and a certain form of brain damage. And it was really, like, once you knew what he was trying to say, the book made a whole lot more sense. Mm-hmm. But I think even Charlie would have to confess that he probably did not as well convey what he intended with that book. Now that I know where his starting point was, it's much more illuminating, but it was an experimental book. I also have to confess some disappointment that there will probably not be any more of his Merchant Princes books, not because he doesn't want to write them, but because his publisher is offering him half the advance on those that he's getting offered for every other book he's got in the pipeline. So it's just sort of a, it's not that they don't like it, it's that they want me to write more Atrocity Archives laundry novels twice as much.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're an author and they're like, you know, here's X and here's 2X, what are you going to do?
Yep. Yeah, and the Laundry series is a fantastic crossover series. I mean, or gender genre crossing series. I have thoroughly enjoyed those. But man. Now, one book that I haven't read of his, I don't know. Did he talk at all about Fuzzy Nation? I've read the H. Beam Piper original story on that, and remember. Just enjoying the heck out of it when I was in my teens, but I hadn't gotten around to picking up Fuzzy Nation. He may not have mentioned it at all, but I was just curious if he said anything about it or if it's done well at all.
Well, he didn't mention it because of John Scalzi wrote it. So.
Oh, I'm thinking of the wrong. I've got him confused. So did Scalzi talk about it then?
Scalzi talked about it extensively, and actually, what he talked about as much as the book was the process of getting it written. Because basically, that the original book in the Fuzzy series was the only one that was in public domain. So he basically wrote that reboot on a lark, and then when his agent called him, like, you know, you haven't submitted a manuscript for me to pitch in a year. He's like, well, I've been just working on other stuff. I was doing Stargate Universe, and I wrote this novel that you could never sell. And his agent said, challenge accepted. And so basically, then they went to the Piper Estate, which is actually owned by Ace Books, and even though they didn't have to get permission, they did just to save the headache. And he did the one thing that authors should never, ever do. He did a complete role reversal, and he wrote the publisher in advance. The author wrote in advance to the publisher against sales of the book.
Wow. That shows some confidence. Man.
Yeah.
Man. And did that work out for him?
Yes, by many multiples. He won't get into specific numbers, but yes, okay. He made out just fine on that. And the truth of the matter is, Scalzi is at the point now that, you know, unless just his next two or three novels really stink, what his name goes on will get sold, you know, because he goes into the Science Fiction Book Club, and he's got his blog is a great promotional platform, so he can just basically guarantee a certain number of sales as long as whatever he prints isn't awful.
Yep. Yeah. And I have a hard time believing that would be the case. I think the Old Man's War series it could have ended a book early there. But still, good stuff all around. Dave is showing me his new BlackBerry Playbook has got this fabulous clock app on it, which is counting down our time and our minutes here. And I think he wants me to hustle it along and get us to answering.
Oh, I want to talk to Jay all day, but
yeah, yeah. I know.
But you promised people cool sites of the week this week.
Especially when we've got we'll have to talk. Are you going to put any blog posts up about your experience at BossCon like you did with the DragonCon stuff?
Yes. Once I finish the DragonCon stuff, I've got two more posts than that I've got to eventually get around to, and then I'll do a BossCon post. So that will happen.
Okay. All right. Well, so we'll be talking about this for sure again in the near future, and people, of course, can find that at jgarman.net. But before I let you run away, we need to know what the answer to last week's or the week before last week's question was, which had to do with a long-awaited space disaster.
Yes. On February 10th, 2009, for the first time in history, two satellites crashed into each other unintentionally. There was finally enough space junk up there for two satellites to accidentally run into each other with such force that one destroyed the other. Iridium 33, which is part of the Iridium, sat phone network, and Cosmos 2251, which is a Russian, basically, spy satellite, slammed into each other at about 40,000 kilometers an hour, basically obliterating each other, which, even though we've been talking about the problem for space debris for decades, is the first time it's actually happened. Which kind of, to me, puts some perspective on the space debris issue. Now, we all know the International Space Station has to actually change orbits, altitudes, and inclinations a lot to avoid known space debris.
Mm-hmm.
But when you still do the math, there's tens of thousands of objects up there, but they're not that big, and there's still a lot of square area. The problem is they're all moving at tens of thousands of miles per hour. So while the actual likelihood of impact right now isn't that great, If you're wrong, you're hosed.
Yeah, yeah. Now, were both of these satellites live, or were these, was one of them, you know, quote-unquote debris, just actual debris?
Cosmos was not actively controlled, but Iridium-33 was still in active use. And it just shows you how complex all the orbital mechanics are, that basically they didn't see this coming.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you would think that, especially if you've got one that's being actively used, actively controlled, and it's being managed in some way, the direction that it's going. And these, I assume, were not geostationary ones then either. These must have been actually kind of transiting through the different orbits and on the around the Earth.
I'm pretty sure at least Iridium was, yes, and I can't imagine there's much value in a spy satellite that was non-transitive. So I would think they would both be. I think the larger issue here is that you just can't accurately model that many orbital objects over long periods of time. The interplay is just too complex.
Man. And Dave keeps slipping through with different ways of showing me how little time there was. I got to ask one last question. So was there any fallout from that? I don't mean like a metallic fallout. I mean like political fallout. Did somebody get sued? Did somebody lose money or have to replace a satellite because of this? Or did they just kind of chalk it?
Because believe it or not, there is actually such a thing as satellite insurance. And so basically,
wow.
it is literally a tens of billions of dollar a year industry is satellite insurance.
Huh.
So Iridium was just compensated for their loss through insurance.
Okay. So they gave a little call to Lloyd's and said, guess what? That policy we took out 7 years ago, I need to cash it in. Man.
Exactly.
So what should we be thinking about for this upcoming week?
Well, this upcoming week we get Leap Day, February 29th. Well, or what everybody thinks is Leap Day.
Oh, Leap Day! I thought you said Leap Day.
When Leap Days were invented, February 29th wasn't the Leap Day. February 29th was created because of the actual Leap Day, the actual day inserted into the original calendar. So, what day of the month in a leap year? What day in February is the real Leap Day that was actually originally inserted? That consequence created February 29th.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
And this will probably have something to do with Chaucer at some point, I'm thinking. He always gets...
Actually, no, it predates him by millennia.
Ah, okay. All right. Good. Because he always seems to get involved with all of these April Fool's Days and all the other business. Oh, man. So what day was actually put in there and then generated Leap Day? All right. Well, that's going
to
be a good one.
Can't wait to hear the answer to that one.
I love talking. And this is a good year to be talking about calendars and problems with calendars and all those issues.
And clocks.
And clocks. Yes, Dave's got, now it's a nice retro digital green that he's showing me. So, Jay, I'm going to let you go back to your wonderful life and contemplate your trips to the East Coast and to Dragon Con and hopefully come up with some of those blog posts fairly soon so we can share and discuss those at greater length at jgarman.net. But you have a great weekend.
You do the same. And one last thing to drive Dave crazy. You know that the World Science Fiction Convention is in Chicago this year.
Oh, cool.
What's the dates for that?
I believe it is Memorial Day weekend, but it is ChiCon 7 is the host for WorldCon this year. So, no, I'm sorry. It's Labor Day weekend. It's the same weekend as Dragon Con. So, you go, Scalzi's the Toastmaster, go to that with your family.
Oh, yes indeed. Yeah, no, I'm going to look that up as soon as we're off air here, actually. That's, that one I can convince my wife to let me go to. It's local. That would be a blast. And as I said, Scalzi's actually, what do you call it? He went to the same college I did. He's a fellow alum.
Alum.
Yeah. So I can can hit, and my wife and I both went to the same school, so I can hit her up with that. You know, we gotta go support our man there, you know, our guy. Anyway, Jay, I'm gonna let you run. Thank you so much again, jaygarman.net for people that need to find more about you, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right, take it easy, fellas.
Take care, Jay. Wonderful to talk to you.
Yep.
Love the guy. Love the guy.
Trying to
love the guy.
Here we go.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Learning the new studio still. Before you go to the spots, I who doesn't love cookies?
Oh, I can't think of anyone.
You feel like a cookie right now?
I love cookies.
What if you could find Girl Scout cookies right now?
What? Here?
Family Video, 724 West Rollins Road, is hosting the Girl Scouts right now. Until 1 o'clock, you could get Girl Scout cookies
there.
That's
not that far. If you're in the listening area, that's a hop, skip, and a thin mint away.
Very good. Family Video, 724 West Rollins Road. And the phone number is 847-740-3616. Once again, till 1 o'clock. If you feel like contributing to a good cause and having some fun gambling as well, Buffalo Wild Wings, 500 East Rollins Road, is hosting a Texas Hold'em poker game tournament at 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock. Seating opens at 1 and 5 respectively. It's Dollars for Scholars, sponsored by the Round Lake Area Chamber of Commerce.
Yep. And so. You should know that they will not accept Thin Mints or Samoas at the...
but you could. You could stop by, get some at Family of Video, get some Girl Scout cookies, and go over to BWW and get and have some poker fun.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. That sounds like a good thing. Hey, we're going to be right back at you in just a minute. I'm going to leave you with some spots and other good stuff. And when we come back, we've got Cool Sights of the Week and the podcast only song of the week as well. So
can't wait.
Stay tuned to Tech Talk on WRLR.
See you in a minute.
WRLR. 98.3 FM.
The Antioch Public Library District provides material and services such as classical and contemporary movies, all genres of music, CDs, and video games. Antioch Library also has a computer lab, BrainFuse for live homework assistance, and a database of magazines to help residents with their recreational, educational, and professional needs. Antioch Library is located at 757 North Main Street in Antioch, Illinois, and is open Monday through Sunday. The phone number is 847-395-0874. The web address is apld.info.
The Point Pancake House, located on Old Highway 41 in Gurnee, is a proud sponsor of WRLR. The Point serves crepes, Belgian waffles, omelets, red velvet French toast, fresh fruits, and of course, their baked apple pancake, The Point, an old-fashioned restaurant in Gurnee for breakfast or lunch. Like a trip back to Grandma's house with a kitchen country-themed decor, The Point is open 7 days per week from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. and offers dine-in and take-out. The phone number is 847-662-4130.
Hi, everybody. Listen to The Mitts, hosted by me, Tony Young, on Mondays from 4 to 5 in the afternoon. That's on WRLR 98.3 LPFM. Anything goes on The Mix.
And we're back.
Anything goes on The Mix?
Anything goes on The Mix.
We've got to go there.
Yeah. I got to have to check that out. Either that or what happens on The Mix stays on The Mix. Yeah. Something like that. and of course, we're just in time for...
Oh, boy! Cool Sights of the Week, just like you promised.
Yeah. See, we make it every once in a while. We have it happen. I got some great ones this week, man.
You always do, Michael. It never fails to amaze me, the great website you come up with.
The web keeps cranking them out. Awesome. It's awesome. I've got a couple of cool ones. I was in kind of a retro mood this last week here, and I ran across this very cool retro type of site. Do you remember games like Zork and all the info tech games, the text adventure type games.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I hated those.
Oh, not me. I loved those. There is a fantastic website. It's called Playfic, PlayFic, like Play Fiction, playfic.com. And there is, it's basically text adventure games. But the twist on it is they're user created. So it's people that have signed up for an account. You don't have to pay anything. You can either play other people's Playfic games, or you can create your own. And they've got there's one lady.
And you can play these on anything. You can play them on any almost any phone, any smartphone, any device, because they're very, you know, they're you don't need a lot of resources.
Yeah, it's web based. So you log in there, and there's this lady named Allison who's done a number of them that are very popular, that are based around the Doctor Who universe, and and then you've also got some. She's also done some that are around the Sherlock Holmes canon. So some fun stuff.
That sounds very interesting, actually.
Fun stuff like that. And then if you really like it and get into it, you go in there and create your own. And smack your own together.
Very cool.
Have a lot of fun with it.
Wow.
I'm going to try and get my my 9-year-old. He loves stuff like that, and I'm trying to get him into maybe writing his own stuff.
That'd be fantastic.
So, because one of the things that he's a fantastic reader. He loves to read. We have a little struggle getting him to write, even though he's a good writer too. So I'm thinking this is a good way to get your kids into writing, because they're not just writing; they're making a game.
Fantasy is one of the best ways to get started writing, I think, for creative writing.
Yep. Fantasy is a good way to get started with a lot of stuff. Yes, we're going there again.
All right. I don't know why I'm shying away from it. I guess because, board members are here or something. Yeah.
That's probably a good reason.
Yeah.
Now I've got another website. Now this is a cool site as a shout out for a good friend, longtime listener, Steve from Money Plan SOS. He loves to listen to the show. He is enamored by our word usage and is sometimes flummoxed or flabbergasted by the word choice choices that we make.
Oh, yeah.
And wants to and it makes note of that but always
too
takes
too much oxygen in the brain.
Yeah, I think but he always takes the time to look them up, and I know that he's got a great way of finding the dictionary definitions of them. Everybody does. You just type define and then the word into Google,
right,
and you can get them, right? But etymologies
oh, sure,
are fun. They're great.
The roots of words.
Yes. Yeah. Well, recently we used the word
evolution.
Yeah, recently we used the word mellifluous, and Steve loved the word, and then I sent him the etymology, and he liked it even more. The etymology of mellifluous comes from the Greek, and meli is honey, and fluous is flowing. It was honey flowing, and that's
isn't that lovely?
That's how your mouth makes the words.
Makes me want Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, it does.
Or baklava. Why don't the girlfriends, the Girl Scouts sell baklava?
Yeah,
a lot of money. Yeah.
Nice crispy little with some honey dripped on there. That sounds pretty good. So don't get hungry though, but go get edumacated. Go to the online etymology dictionary. It's www.etymonline.com, and type in a word. It will give you tons and tons of these words. It'll give the real background in etymology in a short little one sentence blurb of where they come from.
It's a lot of fun. It provides a greater understanding of the world, mankind and language in general.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, it's a good companion site to. And I didn't have this on my list, but it's a good companion site to one of my other favorite places to go if you want a deeper discussion of language and literature and words specifically. I shouldn't say literature, but words and word usage is Worldwide Words. And he's got one of the longest running, still existing weekly newsletters that's about words and etymology. And I'm still on that list. I love his articles. That guy's great. He's produced a number of books. That's, like I said, it's a more in-depth discussion of the language, whereas the online etymology dictionary is really like a dictionary thesaurus sort of thing, and very good stuff.
I think William Burroughs said language is a virus from outer space, and etymology kind of really points it out, how it's sort of been contagious. How one word in one language evolves into another word in another, and so it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, yeah, I love and Chomsky. You know, Noam Chomsky was a bit of a nutcase, but he did have a lot of really interesting ideas. You know, the use of the word meme comes from Chomsky. Chomsky was the one who originally wrote that idea down and came up with the idea that, you know, that words and ideas and concepts could be transmitted, as you say, like a virus. And,
And
it's a neat thing. And do I have time for one more? I think I've got time for one more here. I'm gonna throw it out there. Like I said, because I'm into this real retro phase right now. Here's another great site to go to get your retro on. Go to the Old Time Radio Archive, and this is at archive.org, and it's just the Internet Archive. It's got tons and tons of stuff. It's all, you know, out of copyright. You can download it for free. It's got
old time radio shows,
Dragnet,
like The Shadow,
Gunsmoke.
And of course, we have our own Rick Haggerty here. I don't remember when his show's on anymore, but he does a great job of presenting that stuff on the air. But what a great resource to be able just to go anytime and explore the different
is his show the he's got the Radio Relics show, is that his?
No, that's not. No,
is it
Radio,
musical
Radio
memories?
Musical
memories? I don't know. I'm looking for a promo spot to play for him, so we can get that on there. But
I can't remember what he calls it actually.
He may not have one. But go to wrlr.fm and you can find the full calendar and schedule of the shows that are playing. And that's just one of the many really fantastic shows that are on, aside from us.
This is an amazing radio station.
It truly is.
Despite us.
So if you go to archive.org. You can look around under audio, click on the audio tab at the top, and you'll find radio programs, and you can find it in there. Old Time Radio, just a fantastic selection and collection, like I said, if you're interested in getting your retro on.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So I love listening to that stuff still. And so with that, I think we're going to leave you. I'm going to play a little song called Female Doctor by Miniature Tigers. And
wow.
It...
Sounds great to me.
Since we were talking about fantasy, if you've got any fantasies about female doctors, this'll play into those very nicely. as always, thank you for listening. Don't forget to check us out. You can go to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. That's the main link I'm giving people now. That just seems to be a real good place to go. You can also, too, always text to Tech Talk. Or text the word Tech Talk to the number 50500, and you'll get all the connection information you need to hit us up and
cool.
Get connected with us. So, man, I don't have anything else to say. You got anything else to say, Dave? I think we're out of here.
Well, that'd be nice.
All right. He's showing me that clock again. Tick, tick, tick.
As soon as I saw that, there was a digital clock included with the BlackBerry Playbook, I said, oh.
Yeah.
what a great harassment tool.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for listening. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. And this is Female Doctor by the Miniature Tigers.
See you next time.
For that too.